with the, all our challenges, the more it is clear that multilateralism is the best answer to the problems we face today.
G20 leaders meet as global issues heat. It's Monday, November 1st. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online. Find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, clouds over capturing solar energy, the business of Asian artists, expanding space travel. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Leaders of the world's 20 biggest economies have endorsed a global minimum tax aimed at stopping big business from hiding profits in tax havens. And they also agreed to get more COVID vaccines to poorer nations. Attending their first in-person summit in 2 years, G20 leaders broadly backed calls to extend debt relief for impoverished countries and pledged to vaccinate 70% of the world's population against COVID-19 by mid-2022. However, on the eve of a crucial UN climate conference, the G20 appeared to be struggling to throw its weight behind the sort of strong new measures that scientists say are needed to avert calamitous global warming. The corporate tax deal was hailed as evidence of renewed multilateral coordination, with major corporations facing a minimum 15% tax wherever they operate from 2023 to prevent them from shielding their profits in offshore entities. The G20 summit, hosted by Italy and Rome, brought together the leaders from the world's major economies where they discussed these issues of mutual concern. White House Chief Correspondent Patsy Wittikaswara, who is traveling with U.S. President Joe Biden, has more from Rome.
Presidente degli Stati Uniti d'America.
The red carpet was rolled out in Rome as Italian Prime Minister Mario Draghi welcomed U.S. President Joe Biden and other leaders of the world's largest economies at the G20 summit.
The more we go with all our challenges, the more it is clear that multilateralism is the best answer to the problems we face today.
G20 leaders supported a sweeping global tax deal agreed to by 136 finance ministers earlier this month, including a minimum 15% global corporate tax rate for companies with annual revenues of more than $870 million. It still needs to be implemented within each member country's legal framework.
I'm confident that the U.S. and countries all around the world that have signed on to this deal will now seek to implement it swiftly and in good faith. But that's now a matter for the domestic processes in all those jurisdictions that have signed on.
On COVID-19, G20 health and finance ministers announced the formation of a new panel to improve future pandemic preparedness proposed by the U.S. and Indonesia, but did not specify funding for it. Meeting on the summit sidelines, German Chancellor Angela Merkel, French President Emmanuel Macron, and British Prime Minister Boris Johnson said they support Biden's pledge to return the U.S. to full compliance with the Iran nuclear deal, so long as Tehran does the same. Talks are scheduled for November.
We are, of course, counting on Iran to return to the negotiating table. However, time is passing and enrichment is continuing in Iran.
It's the first face-to-face G20 meeting in 2 years. Notably absent are Chinese President Xi Jinping and Russian President Vladimir Putin, who joined virtually, citing pandemic concerns at home.
Despite the G20 decisions, not all countries that need them can have access to vaccines. This happens partly because of dishonest competition, protectionism, and because some states, especially those of the G20, are not ready for mutual recognition of vaccines and vaccination certificates.
Activists marched through the streets of Rome protesting the lack of action by G20 leaders in tackling climate change. Leaders move on to the UN climate conference, COP26, in Glasgow, Scotland. Patsy Wittikaswara, VOA News.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Secretary of State Antony Blinken raises concerns about Taiwan with China. European MPs meet with Taiwan envoy despite China risks. China hits reset on Belt and Road Initiative. Man with knife stabs at least 10 on Tokyo train. Thai businesses eager for foreign tourists' imminent return. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more when you visit us at Facebook at VOA Asia. Join us as well on Instagram, Twitter, and the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Some American solar energy companies are calling on the U.S. Commerce Department to expand tariffs on Chinese solar companies to include Chinese-linked products from Malaysia, Vietnam, and Thailand. VOA's Michael Sullivan reports on a debate that has divided the solar industry.
American solar installations benefit from U.S. tax incentives and the ability to use cheap components from China, where lower labor costs and fewer environmental restrictions contribute to the lower price tag.
They don't have to play by the same rules we have to play by.
Financing is another reason, as Chinese businesses get low-cost loans from state-owned banks, letting them cut prices.
It starts decades ago with the buildup in China and truly aggressive pricing, and call it dumping if you wanted. They built their industry on aggressive pricing.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump imposed a 30% tariff on Chinese solar imports in 2018. While tariffs have since dropped to 18%, some American manufacturers say they are still needed for now.
Until we become competitive enough, we can get in economies of scale to produce at the same cost level and sell at the same price as the Chinese competitors.
In August, 18 solar companies asked U.S. trade officials to expand tariffs to companies in three Southeast Asian nations whose products they say are really made in China.
And of course, the fundamental question is that how much of those commodities or goods, you know, the solar panels and modules, are really made in those countries? It's hard to tell.
That's because solar components can be made in one place and assembled somewhere else. Another reason Chinese solar cells are cheaper, much of the polysilicon they use comes from coal-fired plants in western China, where more than 1 million Muslim Uyghurs have been confined in re-education camps.
About 45-46% of China's polysilicon is produced in Xinjiang with forced labor. I don't think you can get any cheaper than that.
Labor shortages from COVID, power cutbacks in China, and backups at U.S. ports, all creating turbulence in the solar industry. But there is a divide over the tariff issue. Tariffs raise the cost of essential components, says a nonprofit company that makes solar panels in disadvantaged communities.
If you're trying to stimulate a resurgence of manufacturing in the United States, but some of the submaterials required have to come from Asia. And if you put onerous tariffs on those materials,
that hurts American manufacturing, he says. Regardless of where the components are made, demand for solar power is growing.
The industry doubles in size about every 3 years.
Because we are a leader, we are an intelligent powerhouse of these new technologies.
Despite the trade dispute, Cornell's Feng Cheng Yu adds, the future of solar power is bright. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News.
Now on VOA Asia, Asian artists and jewelry decorate today's edition of VOA Asia Business Scene with Chris Cascao.
In a hot and stuffy room in Hanoi, Tran Tan Thuc holds up a delicate silk scarf and begins snipping it into tiny pieces, ready to paste onto her works of art. For four decades, Tran has been recreating Vietnamese landscapes using vibrant shades of fabric cut from scarves. Traditional Ao Dai, which is a long split tunic, or whatever material she could find during years of poverty in the 80s. Often using hundreds of thousands of pieces of cloth to shape trees, rivers, and patches of sky, the 61-year-old artist doesn't dare to cool her home studio with fans or air conditioning, even in the boiling summers of the Vietnamese capital.
With this fabric, there is no way I can use the fan. The details, before being glued to the frame, are very tiny. So if I turn on the fan, the details will be blown away. I also have a big pile of cloths here, so it is hard to avoid dust. So I don't dare turn on the air conditioner.
For most of the years, Tran has worked with cloth. She also kept a day job as a civil servant and only had time to do what she loved during the night. But her fortune began to change when an American collector bought a work in 2000. And around a decade ago, she started to be invited to exhibitions and her work began to sell. Now her creations sell for between $1,000 and $5,000, and she has taken part in shows around Vietnam. In Mumbai's jewelry bazaar, Kavita Jogani gingerly places her wedding bangles on the shopkeeper's scales. One of the thousands of Indians parting with their most cherished asset, gold. It was not an easy decision. Jogani was desperate after her garment business took a severe hit in the past year and a half with multiple coronavirus lockdowns, making it difficult to pay shop bills and the salaries of her 15 employees.
I have come here to sell the gold because we are in a very financial crisis due to the pandemic. Just to meet our expenses, I don't have any other option rather than selling the gold.
The headline growth numbers suggest Asia's third largest economy is rebounding from the economic crisis unleashed by COVID-19, but there is no end yet to the financial pain for many Indians. Business closures and job losses pushed more than 230 million Indians into poverty in the past year, according to a study by Azim Premji University, leaving many struggling to pay rent, school fees, and hospital bills. Their difficulties have been compounded in recent weeks by soaring prices for electricity, fuel, and other items. Desperate for cash, many families and small businesses have been putting up gold jewelry, their last resort, as collateral to secure short-term loans to tide them over. For Business Scene, I'm Chris Cascajo.
NASA is moving forward with its next moon mission. Plus, SpaceX readied its Halloween space launch, and Blue Origin offers an orbiting office park for the future. VOA's Arash Arabasadi brings us news from space.
With space tourism officially taking flight, billionaire Amazon and Blue Origin founder Jeff Bezos wants you to get to work at an outer world office space his company calls Orbital Reef.
Think of it as a village. Think of it as many different organizations and people in their own parts of Orbital Reef doing their own activities.
Blue Origin announced plans to develop and operate the space station and has partnered the company with Boeing, among others. The station is expected operational by the second half of this decade. But before that happens, and if things continue going according to plan, NASA will deploy its Space Launch System, the SLS, for its next generation of deep space missions. Here, the U.S. Space Agency stacks its fully assembled rocket and spacecraft it plans to use for operations that include trips to and around the moon. It's part of NASA's Artemis program, and the agency plans to launch an uncrewed round-trip mission to the moon in early 2022 with a goal of putting the first woman and next man on the moon by 2024. In other news, the SpaceX launch would mark the American space tech company's fourth trip carrying NASA astronauts and its fifth overall. But a potential setback threatened the mission with news of faulty plumbing. SpaceX's Inspiration 4 mission, or its passengers rather, suffered a leaky toilet that Space.com reports has since been resolved. Finally, the sun may be the best friend of solar power, but it seems the sworn enemy of modern technology. Researchers at this lab in England study how solar radiation in space impacts digital electronics on Earth by blasting them with neutrons to simulate solar flares and their impact on technology.
A neutron comes down, hits that memory, hits a bit of silicon in that memory state, and turns a zero into a one or a one into a zero. Everything in our digital world is stored by ones and zeros.
Experts say radiation spikes and the flipping of ones and zeros happen almost every year. This is an inconvenience for consumer electronics, but also dangerously threatens autonomous cars and their ability to see and navigate the world around them. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
We thank you for joining us today for VOA Asia. Continue online. You'll find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We also thank our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Keith Lane, Amy Hybels, Chris Cascao, and Jessica Stone. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.